The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We are talking about the meaning of the very special name of God, which is the Tetragrammaton, whatever they refer to it as, the special four-letter name referring to the divine. Until now, we have clarified the meaning of searching for truth, and we've clarified the usage of words, and how we have to be very careful that the words do not substitute the reality, but point to it, and rather than becoming an obstacle or a wall to our encounter with what is, it becomes a window. And so too, we have to be very, very careful with any names that are used as an attribute to the divine, that the names are understood that way. So, before we start talking about mitzvot, man, purpose, all that kind of stuff, we have to deal with, when you say God, what do you mean? But to be more specifically, when you say Hashem, what do you mean? Because that's what we believe in, right? We believe in Yud, the Hey, the Vav, and then the Hey. Boy, okay? And to give you a sense of what all this is doing, according to mystical sources, the four-lettered name is considered to be the essential name of God. Now, of course, on the other hand, we have sources that say that there are no names to the divine. So insofar as there are names, right, or insofar as what a name means, this name is considered to be Shem Ha'etzem. It's referred to as the name or the name of essence. Shem Ha'etzem, the name of the essence. Okay? Now there are other names for the divine in Jewish teachings. There are many names. There is the name Elohim. I say K instead of Hey. So as not to use the name for no reason and not to have it on the tape if it was ever erased. There's Tzvakot, there's Shakai, there's many different names for God. And what is their relation to this name? Well, they're considered to be all included within this name. And they're considered to be like garments to this name. Now, mystically, this name is understood to be the structure of all of reality. And if we understood what this name means, we would know the secret of all of reality. But not only all of reality, but Kabbalah says that every, not only the macroscopic, but the microscopic of reality is structured according to this name. And so this name would be the fundamental structure of all of reality. It's almost like this idea of the Fibonacci formula. There's a fellow who came up with some kind of mathematical formula which proves to be completely consistent with everything you see. Everything you see, everything in the world, big or small, somehow fits into this formula. Well, so too here, this name has within it expressed the basic structure of reality, so Kabbalah says. And in the simple sense, this name has five levels. The five levels coordinating to the world of action, starting at the Hey, the world of formation, the Vav, the world of creation, the next Hey, and then the Yud is the world of emanation, and the top of the Yud is called primordial man, Adam Kadmon. Yes, the world of action, formation, creation, emanation, and primordial man, referred to as Adam Kadmon. And what these worlds are, we'll talk about in the future, which correlates to the structure of soul. The macroscopic world is reflected in our own microscopic world, in our own cells, in fact, and therefore there are five levels of soul. There is what's referred to as nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and Yechida, which we will talk about in about a week from now, when we will explore the meaning of the various levels of soul and consciousness. And according, and of course, there's the five books of Moses. This idea of five, which is expressive in this name, is crucial. In Jewish astrology, every month of the year coordinates to, correlates to, a different combination of the four-letter word. Because if you were to put this word Yud Kei Vav Kei into the various kind of combinations you could put it in, which would be like backwards, Hey Vav Hey Yud, or Hey Hey Vav Yud, or Yud Hey Hey Vav, you would get 12. And each month correlates to one combination of these letters, and the mystic who knows this type of astrology would understand you in terms of your relationship to that name. And going a little deeper, the Ari, Rav Isaac Luria, who was one of the greatest Kabbalists who existed in the history of the Jewish people, he would diagnose people through this name by having them imagine the name in their minds. So let's do that for a second. Right? You can close your eyes or not, whatever, but imagine that name in front of you. Look at it. Yud, a hey, then a vav, and then a hey. That's all he'd ask them to do. So do that. Think about it. See it. Now, can someone describe what they see? You can keep your eyes closed. What do you see? Can you see all the letters? Or is there some letters that are blinking in and out? Or are there parts of letters that you can't really visualize? Anyone want to share what they see?
I can't see all the letters at once.
You can't keep them all at once. What about colors?
Red.
Red? Yellow? All I can tell you is the Ari, based on what you would say. Colors. Right, various letters blinking in and out, pieces of letters missing, the Ari would tell you exactly what's wrong with you. Right? Got to get your glasses fixed. He would tell you exactly what's wrong with you, and then he would prescribe a mitzvah, like not like an antibiotic. He would tell you, well, you know what's wrong with you? You're not. There's something wrong with your tefillin. Or you know what's wrong with you? Something wrong with your mezuzah. Or you're not giving enough tzedakah. And he actually had the ability to explain to a person how it is, what is wrong with them, why are they sick, and how can they get back to wholeness and health, which I can't do, so. But just realize that there's something about this name that through the visualization of the name, one can understand where they're at. Now, how it works, I can explain. The details, I can't. But how it works, I can explain, but not in this class. All right? We'll do another time. Now, there's a fundamental meditation that the Jewish people live with, which is Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. I always place before me the Yud, the He, the Vav, and then the He. All right? It's a fundamental meditation. You will find it at the front of most study halls or prayer halls. That this is something that Jews aspire to. Now, what does that mean, is the question today. Does it mean, like, I bump into telephone poles because I keep seeing a big Yud and Hay in front of me? I mean, what exactly does that mean? So, before we can understand what it means, we would like to understand, when we say God, what do we mean? Or when we say Hashem, what do we mean? So I'm taking from the first book of Maimonides, 14-volume book of Jewish law, called Yad HaChazakah, the strong hand. And he begins his book with a book called the Book of Knowledge. And the beginning of the Book of Knowledge, which is the Rambam's, Maimonides' clarification of the 613 mitzvot, as he clarifies the particular halachot necessary for their fulfillment, the Rambam starts off with a chapter called The Laws Dealing with the Foundations of Torah. And what is the beginning of his book, which is, to a certain extent, the beginning of Judaism? Yesod ha-yesodot, the foundation of foundations, va'amud ha-chachmot, and the pillar of all wisdoms, leida, is to know. Sheyesh sham, there is, mitzui rishon, there is a primary reality. A primary is. Vehu mamtzi, and he is producing kol nimtza, all that exists. Mekala nimtzaim, and all that exists, meshamayim va'aretz, from heaven and earth, umab shebeinehim, and whatever is between heaven and earth, lo nimtzu, they do not exist, ela, except me'amitat hemtza'o, except from the truth of his own existence. So, one more time. The foundation of all foundations, the pillar of all wisdoms, is to know that there is a primary reality, an is, which is producing, or who is producing, all that exists. And all that exists from heaven and earth, and whatever is between them, do not exist except from the truth of his own existence. Now, first of all, this is a very powerful statement, because the Rambam is making a universal statement. He didn't say Jews have to believe this, right? It's very interesting. He said Jews should believe there's a God. He didn't say that. He says that the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of all wisdoms is to know that there is a primary reality which is producing all that exists. Meaning, not only in order to be a nice Jewish boy or girl, not only if you are of a religious inclination or a spiritual disposition, but even if you're an engineer, even if you're a chemist, biologist, the foundation of all foundations, the pillar of all wisdoms, is to know this. And if you don't know this, you're missing the fundamentals of science, psychology, physics, whatever. That's a very heavy statement, which helps us understand who is it that Jews believe in. But now, I want you to realize, in a funny way, the Rambam hints to what he's getting at. Because in Hebrew, Yesod starts off with which letter? Yud. Ha-Yesodot. Hey. Ve'amud. Vav. Ha-Chachmot. Which, in fact, those first four letters of each word is enlarged. Yud Kei Vav Kei. So in a funny way, he's hinting to this name, but why didn't you just use the name? Right? I think he's doing something really educationally brilliant. So he's talking about Yud Kei Vav Kei, but only in a hint form. Because this isn't who God is. This is what we call God. Big difference. Right? Big difference. If I were to say God is the primary reality, that's not right. The primary reality which was, is, and will be, the source of all reality, is what we call Yud Kei Vav Kei. Very important distinction. Now, there is this primary reality which is producing all that exists. Now, that's very important. He didn't say produced all that exists, but is producing right now. We do not understand creation as a static one-time act, but an ongoing act. Just as the image in your mind only exists as long as you are thinking of that image, so too the world and existence only continues to the extent that this primary is, was, will be, is expressing, producing existence. Very important to understand. Because there are philosophies that believe that, yes, there was a God, God created the world, and then left it. Right? But our understanding, or when we say God, what are we referring to? We're referring to a source, which is the dynamic, ongoing source for even this very moment that we're in right now, and this very place that we're in right now. Okay. And then he says something that seems to be redundant. He says, and he is producing all that exists. Okay. But then he continues to say, and all that exists, from heaven to earth, and whatever is between them, do not exist except from the truth of his own existence. Now, what does that mean? What is he now saying? To say that, and everything that exists, I mean, isn't that redundant? The Rambam Maimonides just said that whatever exists is being produced by this primary reality, this is. So what is he saying? What is he adding over here? And he is producing all that exists, and all that exists from heaven and earth, whatever is between them, do not exist except from the truth of his own existence. Now this is crucial. This is crucial. Because it's one thing to say that this primary reality is producing all that exists. It's another thing to say that everything that exists from heaven to earth, from the most celestial to the most physical, and whatever is between those two poles, do not exist except from the truth of his own existence. That means that existence is a manifestation of the primary reality, which was, is, will be. That's different. You see, to say, well, I'm producing this, doesn't mean it's an outpouring of me. It doesn't mean it's an expression of my own truth. Right? If I sing your song, so then I'm producing it, but it is not from the truth of my own existence. You follow? It's your song, it's not mine. But in a deep way, we understand that whatever you see in the world, and whatever is truly real, all is a manifestation of what is. All is a manifestation of what is. So what do we call the primordial is? It's kind of hard to argue with a primordial is. Even a person who says, I believe in the Big Bang Theory, where did it happen? I mean, you know. What was the primordial reality that gave place in space and ground for there to be these whatevers buzzing around in reality that hit each other and emerged into the world as we know it? There's no way of getting out of it. There must have been a primary reality, self-sufficient, itself not created, but was, is, and will be. And we understand that it is this primary reality which is the source and really the ground and ultimately the soul of all that exists, which is its own manifestation. That's the meaning of this word. Because where does this word come from? Yud ke vav ke. It comes from Haya Hove Yihyeh. Was, is, and will be. Haya, right? Was, hover, is, yihyeh, will be. This name of God, or this name that we use, is the name that reflects our encounter with the primordial reality, the ground, the source, that which was, is, and will be. And all of existence is a reflection and an expression and a manifestation of that primordial reality. And therefore, in everything will be found this name, Because everything is a manifestation of God. Now, does that mean everything is God? No. Of course not. But in our encounter with the world, the way the Jew articulates their direct encounter with the world is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. So you have to be very, very clear. We are not saying that Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is what is. We're saying what is, we call Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. And whatever we encounter in life is actually a manifestation of what is, which we call Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. The question really is, so based on your encounter with Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, primordial, ultimate reality, was, is, will be, right? Based on your encounter, what are the characteristics as so exposed and so revealed to you, so understood by you? So first of all, just from a philosophical point of view, what is this self-sufficient? Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, Hashem is self-sufficient, the primordial reality, the source of which all else is the divine expression and manifestation, does not exist except from the truth of His own existence. And every positive characteristic that is in the world, a manifestation of what is, was, will be Hashem. Everything positive in the world must be included within the original reality. Right? Just as the tree is included within the seed, so too, whatever we witness on the stage of reality must exist, in possibility at least, within the primordial, ultimate reality, original reality, was, is, will be Hashem. And therefore, if we find in reality life and consciousness, then there is no reason for us to assume, or it's actually unreasonable to assume, that the was, is, will be Hashem is anything less than, or has anything less than life and consciousness, and certainly infinitely much more.
So David, can you get so much of us
being... Yes. What we believe in is an original reality, which is kind of hard to argue with, you know. An is. Can't argue with an is. And we understand that all that we see in the world, in the universe, is an expression of what is. It's kind of hard to argue that also. And therefore, what is, being the source of all that we encounter, could certainly not be anything less than what we encounter. So if we encounter in the world life and consciousness, then it's unreasonable to assume that the primary reality is anything less than alive and conscious. And certainly could be even infinitely more. So therefore, it really isn't completely fair to say what is, because since in the world I encounter more than what's, I encounter who's, so then the primary reality couldn't be anything less than a who. And we might feel comfortable saying the who is, because that minimizes also, because certainly the source of reality is most probably infinitely greater than existence itself. So therefore, we understand that we have problems, you know, with our words. We understand that our words are limited. But what we're simply trying to do is trace to the original reality, which is self-sufficient, a function of nothing prior to it. But then I can't say it, because since it is the primary reality, which everything else is a function of, it would be no less than everything else, which is a function of the primary was, is, will be. And therefore, we also understand the primary is as being no less than conscious and alive. Okay? See, generally people like to say, yes, there was original energy. There was like a primary energy. Right? But maybe there was a primary mind. Right? I mean, nowadays we're going back and through physics we're saying, so what is everything made of? What is the source of everything? What is the essence of everything? What is the is? That everything is merely a manifestation of and various expressions and forms of. Where expressions of. So now science will go back and say, well, it's energy. Well, but so then what is energy? Where did energy come from? Is energy the original source? Do you accept that life was born out of energy? That love was born out of energy? Right? And that when I die, I return to the original, which is energy, which is like... So whatever we encounter in the world, love, beauty... That, at the very least, would be included in the primary was, is, will be Hashem. Okay? Of course, our question will be, what about evil? Right? We'll talk about that. Because the sources say that God created evil also. And another aspect that we'd have to understand philosophically about the original was, is, will be Hashem, is that Hashem is completely free. Why? Because there is nothing prior to the original reality which the original reality is dependent upon or limited by. Do you follow? Right. So by definition, the original reality, which could be certainly no less than the manifestations that we encounter in the world, which is life and consciousness, we'll have to understand that this original source, which is no less alive and conscious, is completely free, philosophically, by definition. Because there doesn't exist anything prior to this original reality, being that it's the original reality, that it must answer to, or that he or she must answer to, and is limited by. Okay? And therefore, the primary is, was, will be Hashem, is in no way limited by time and space.
Therefore,
the primary was, is, will be the original reality, Hashem, the source of all that we see before us, is not limited by time and space, because if, in order for time and space to limit the original reality, time and space would have to be prior to. And we understand that time and space is itself part of the manifestation of the original reality, Hashem. Okay? That would mean that the original reality, which is no less than life and consciousness, that Hashem transcends the limitations of space, which means that Hashem is completely, entirely, in every moment and in every place. Right? Completely transcendent of the limitations of space and simultaneously beyond all that. Right? Which is hard for us to in any way talk about because we live in time and space. But if you could imagine a reality which is completely free of time and space, independent of time and space, then that means that this original reality is in the ever-present now, always. Right? And that would mean that this original reality would not be a soul, because a soul is the opposite of a body. And they are mutual dependent, but being that the original reality is not dependent on anything, because if it were, then that would no longer be the original reality. Right? A reality which is dependent is no longer the original one, and we believe in, or we don't believe in, whatever the original reality is, that's the reality we believe in, right? So therefore, it wouldn't be correct to say that God is some soul. One last piece and then we'll put it together. It's all highfalutin philosophy, but very, very important when we get to the practical aspects of what it means in Jewish experience. The last thing is that the primary reality is completely one, with no parts and no divisiveness, because parts and division belong to the realm of time and space. And being that the primary reality is prior to time and space, right, then the original reality, Hashem, which we refer to as Hashem, the was, is, will be, Yud Kei Vav Kei Hashem, is completely one. Whatever that means will develop later.
That's as far as our understanding can go, because in the realm
of course,
time and space, there might be the possibility that there could be some sections, whatever that may be.
Well, that's just our problem of trying to talk, because we have language that
but
belongs to time and space.
It's a realm that we can't understand, because we're limited with our language and with our understanding.
Right, but we can encounter.
There are some type of a different type of limitation in that realm.
There cannot be any limitations to the original reality, because if there were, then it would no longer be the original reality. By definition, an original reality, being original, nothing prior to it, will be completely independent.
Okay, then how can that reality have parts?
It doesn't.
Why?
Because parts is a statement within time and space, right? And being that time and space comes after this original reality, right? Then this original reality is in no way.
You're using your definition of parts in terms of time and space and applying it to something that doesn't have. Is not limited.
I know, so that's why the word parts is absolutely meaningless in relation to God.
Okay, so but our understanding of parts, potentially there could be a similar word that could be applied to the spiritual realm.
The spiritual, yes, but not to the divine.
Or to the divine.
No, not to the divine, because we're not telling you what the divine is. We're simply saying whatever is the original reality was, is, will be, right? If you are completely rational and philosophical about it, what would be the characteristics of the original was, is, will be, right? This is what those characteristics will be. And it is that reality that we reach out to, which we call God. And it's that reality which we have to understand is certainly no less alive than we are, because if we're alive, right, and we have life to us, then the source from whence everything emerges and expressive certainly would be no less alive than we are, and probably infinitely much more. Okay? I'm just trying to be very careful, because there is a tendency that people would like to see what comes earlier becomes less personal. Right? But that's not realistic to say. Right? It's not realistic to assume that original reality is any less, or could have any less the qualities of the personal than we do. Right. And we are influenced by science in terms of trying to understand that the underlying layer, ground source of reality is energy, which is impersonal and kind of dead. I mean, energy is not really alive, conscious. Right? So, that's what we believe in. We don't believe in God. What we believe in is the original, primary reality, which is the source and ground of all of existence. All of existence being the expression and manifestation of this original reality, which was, is, will be. And we refer to that reality as Hashem. Right? Now, all the other names of God are various names, a function of unique types of encounters we have with the was, is, will be, Hashem. The unique encounters based on who you are and the unique situations you're in will determine the unique kind of experience you've had with this, with Hashem. And therefore, sometimes in one situation, I encounter judgment. Other situations, I encounter great love. Right? Different names. Right? Different names. But all those names are still, so to speak, faces of, garments of, this one primary reality, Hashem. At one time, the Jewish people knew the secret of all the various names and would know how to use the names, those names which would be appropriate to the situation they're in, essential to whatever they needed at that time. Right? That's an art that we've lost. But at one time, the Jewish people knew exactly the meaning of all the names and the kind of encounter and relationship it would establish for them, between them and Hashem, He who was, is, will be. Okay? Just as I have various names, my children call me father, my wife might call me husband, my students might call me rabbi, my mother will call me son, right? My father will call me bum. There are various different names, right? Which are different encounters of the one essence which they're all referring to. That which is. Okay? So too, in Judaism, we have different names for the divine. We don't believe that there are any names to the divine. We believe that what is, and the name that we use to refer to the primary was, is, will be, is Hashem. And there is a personal note to that. A personal note attributed to an encounter with what is, in terms of the sense of personalness, an encounter with what is, in terms of the sense of care and love, but sometimes the encounter with, so at that point it's who is, but sometimes the encounter with is very impersonal and you feel very lost. And there are various names that point to the personal encounter, the more impersonal encounter, but whatever it is, we're talking about establishing a relationship between ourselves and that original source and ground. Okay? Yeah?
Okay, there's a concept about God being like a collective soul, like everyone's collective souls. But in Judaism, like being a big Adam, let's say that just started splitting up like into different souls, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in Judaism, is it more like that the soul cleaves unto God, that or Hashem, the soul cleaves unto Him, not that we're all collective souls that makes up God.
In Judaism, all we understand is all of existence is like a simple, endless light. That's how the Kabbalah starts off. In the beginning, all of existence was a perfect, simple, endless light. Now, what does light suggest? An expression and manifestation. A revelation. What is the source of this light? Right? The source of this light, which was, is, will be. Right? Which is no less than whatever is included in this light, which is life and consciousness. It is that source that we call out to and yearn and seek to maintain relationship with.
So,
of course, if you lose your relationship with God, at that point you die. Why? Because you've cut yourself off from the very source and ground of existence. You no longer exist. It's like the image in your mind losing their relationship to you, which is the original mind that gave them place and space and created the image in your mind in the first place.
So our souls, God is not a collective of everybody's soul, but our souls cleave unto God, which is His light.
Which is His light?
Which is this light that you're talking about.
Well, let's take it the next step.
Okay.
You see, all the various names of God are in terms of our encounter with the particular behavior that we encounter from this original source. There are no names of God that in any way capture the essence of the divine. All we can understand of the divine is our encounter with the divine. The divine is so perceived by us. A function of the divine is so encountered by us. Ultimately, the divine is referred to as Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. He who was, is, and will be. But taking it another step, all the names, again, are encounters that we have with the actions of God. So, to give you an example, if I saw someone dancing, they would be called what? If their name is based on their actions.
Dancer.
Very good. Right? And if I see someone or encounter someone singing, I would call them a
singer.
Right? And if I encounter someone speaking, I would call them a speaker. So that means implicit in this name must be the verb that I encounter. Right? We understand God only through the verb, through the divine acts. What is the verb that this name is built from?
Lihiyot.
To be. Lihiyot. To be. And that would mean that this name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, is based on the fundamental activity which is born out of this original source, which is what? Being. What is God doing? God is being. And if you're being, if you're dancing, you'd be called a dancer. If you're speaking, you'd be called a speaker. If you're singing, you'd be called a singer. If you're being, what would you be called?
Being.
Being?
Yeah.
If you're singing, a be
earth.
A be earth. Now, if you look in the Webster Dictionary, the unabridged edition, which is kind of hard to find, you'll actually find this word. Beer, defined as an intoxicating drink. But after that, B-E-dash-E-R, defined as the self-existent, dash, God. Yes. The self-existent, dash, God. Who is God? Webster said, Beer, the self-existent, dash, God. So who is God?
Self-existent.
Wrong. The self-existent is what we call God. Get it straight. Get the word after the reality, not before. Not who is God, the self-existent. The self-existent is what we refer to as God. And if you look in the dictionary, guess who you are? You are a being. You're a verb. Right? You're a human being. But who is the beer to all being? Reality is a dynamic action of being. And is that source of being the be-er that we believe in, which we call God. And you are a being. As the song is to the singer, you are is to God. As the dance is to the dancer, you are is to God. All of existence is born out of the truth of divine owns, the divine's own existence. An expression, a revelation. So, as the Kabbalah teaches, in the beginning, all of existence was a simple, endless light, a divine light. That's how the mystic conceptually articulates their encounter with reality and understands it to be a manifestation of an original reality. He that was, is, will be, Hashem. So as the song cleaves to the singer, so too we aspire to cleave to God. The problem is, whereas a song has no free choice, and a dance can't go on its own and do its own thing, how does free choice fit into an expression of the divine? That's the question we'll have to be, we will struggle with. How is it that we have free choice? As the thought is to the thinker, we are to God. The mind is the source for the thought in their mind. If you could think of a little girl in your mind, where did she come from? Your mind. Right. Where does she exist? In your mind. But she doesn't have self-consciousness, nor does she have free choice. She can only do what you're thinking her to be doing. The question is, how do we have free choice? Which, of course, there are many philosophers said we don't. Because being that all is a manifestation of what is, then it's all fatalistic. So the only reality that could limit God of God himself. And that's when free choice comes in. Right? When we talk about the Tzimtzum. No, it's not self-contradictory.
If God is limitless, then how could he limit himself? Because thereby...
But if God couldn't limit himself, he wouldn't be limitless either. So we will get down to that. So I appreciate that this has all been very heavy, heady, philosophical, you know, philosophy 501 or something. But as it's a crucial foundation to then get into the experience of what that means. So thank you very much, Rabbi. But what does that mean experientially in my life? That's what we're going to talk about. That's what Judaism talks about all the time, right? This is the beginning of the Rambam, but then the Rambam says, and so what is the ramifications of this in terms of human behavior? Now that you have become aware of was, is, will be, the original reality, no less alive and conscious than you, probably even much more so than you, once I'm aware of that, what does that mean in my life? What does that mean in my experience? Well, the first thing you have to understand is the foundation of all foundations, the pillar of all wisdom, is that there is a primary reality that's producing all that exists. That means that all that exists is a manifestation of that one primary reality. And therefore, if you are a physicist, until you're willing to look for the unified field theory, you don't know the foundations of physics. Because anybody who knows and understands that all of existence, being very clear with my words, all of existence is a manifestation of a one original reality, a first cause, then you will know that somehow all is unified, interfaced, interdependent, interdefined. And there's nothing that exists that is independent of itself, of anything else that exists, or the source from whence it came. And that would be the true realization of the unity that exists between the being and the beer. Whether you live with that, whether you experience that connection, that's what Judaism is concerned with doing. A religion actually comes from the word religios. Ligios in Latin means to bind. And re means to bind again. A religion should be concerned with rebinding the individual to their source. Which is actually a process of breaking through the illusion that I was ever independent of the source.
How about if you're an astrologist?
What about if I was an astrologist?
Well, how does that fit into Judaism? Can we consult?
Of course. Judaism and astrology. In fact, so much of Judaism is connected to astrology, which we'll talk about in the future. The difference is, we do not accept astrology in terms of interfering with our freedom of choice. Astrology can be fatalistic. We are not fatalistic. We believe that in the full manifestation of the original reality, Hashem, right, would be included a being who has free choice. And that freedom of choice itself is the greatest manifestation of the almightiness of this primary reality.
So by consulting astrology, or looking at that, we're taking away from our free choice because it says something.
Well, astrology, when used wrong, is not Jewish. There is, you can use astrology to help you understand your persona that you've been born with and learn how to direct it. I mean, the Talmud speaks about a person who's born under the star of Mars. Well, then the Talmud says that such a person will have a drive for blood. But you have a choice. You can either take that drive for blood and become a warrior, a murderer, right? Or you could become a surgeon, right? There's nothing in this world that is, in essence, evil. It's how you choose to use it. It's how you choose to use it. Right? But ultimately, everything boils down to a manifestation of what is. And what is, or who is what we call Hashem. And it is who is that directs our lives. But again, the question is free choice, which we will deal with really at great length. So how do I have free choice? Right. How do I have free choice? But you already know part of the answer, because nothing can limit God except God Himself. And that itself might be the greatest manifestation of His own almightiness. Right? Sometimes the greatest manifestation of one's genius is the ability to give place and space to other people. Right? Sometimes the manifestation of great genius Einstein was to teach a little girl math and to limit himself. That itself is a great manifestation of the original reality, right? Hashem. So we will develop that as we enter into the Kabbalistic concept of the Tzimtzum, the constriction. Yeah?
So as far as the collective consciousness thing, would that be like Adam? Would he be considered the collective consciousness of everybody's soul?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But it goes more than that, which I didn't really want to get into because... Oh, you mean Adam... Adam had the possibility to realize his collective consciousness, but he didn't. So I don't want you to make a mistake.
Oh, right? Hold on.
Adam collapsed. Right?
Right, so
in
he
his
wasn't
own making.
Collective consciousness.
He had the potential.
He had the potential.
Yeah. But he didn't.
Okay.
He never realized that.
Because I'm confused that when... Okay, when individuals cleave to God, it's like an individual soul in a way, right? But isn't there a binding of all those souls into one force? And if that force isn't God, then how does that force relate to God?
Well, all I can say is, when we say God, what do we mean? The original was, is, will be... The original reality, which is the source and ground of all of existence. All of existence, whatever, from heaven and earth and whatever's between, only exists as an expression of the truth of his own existence.
Okay.
That's all I can
so
say at this point.
Adam
had the possibility to realize his collective consciousness, but he didn't. So I don't want you to make a mistake.
Oh, hold on.
Adam collapsed. Right.
Right. So
in
he
his
wasn't
own making.
Collective consciousness.
He had the potential.
He had the potential.
Yeah. But he didn't.
Okay.
He never realized that.
Because I'm confused that when... Okay, when individuals cleave to God, it's like an individual soul in a way, right? But isn't there a binding of all those souls into one force? And if that force isn't God, then how does that force relate to God?
Well, all I can say is, when we say God, what do we mean? The original was, is, will be the original reality, which is the source and ground of all of existence. All of existence, whatever, from heaven and earth and whatever's between, only exists as an expression of the truth of his own existence.
Okay.
That's all I can
so
say at this point.
Adam,
to go further than that, we'll have to wait.
That's how it relates to this. Adam recognizing this.
How does that relate to this right now?
Okay.
Right. Obviously, this is the source of that.
This is the creation of that.
No, this is part of the expression of Hashem.
But Adam could have recognized every part of his soul, which would have been like every part of everyone's soul?
To a certain extent, yes.
Okay.
I would not want to be forced into some kind of statement because the words are not coming close to what they should
right.
be referring to.
Okay.
So I would just like to leave things, you know, I would not like to in any way invade reality with too many words at this point.
Okay.
You know, I think we've suggested enough. To try and become more articulate about it, I think is a mistake, because that's forcing, then we don't understand what we're talking about. I don't think it's a good idea to become too articulate about it, because it's beyond that, and ultimately, it's life experience. Right? It's life experience. All right, what else? Yeah?
You said everything is dependent, nothing can exist independent of this source.
Mm-hmm.
So, when they use the phrase, your soul is cut off, what does that mean? If you're cut off from the source, what are you?
Well, that's your experience. That's what you will experience, being cut off.
So
what's true in reality and the extent that you experience it, those are two different things.
Does anybody's soul actually go clink?
Clink?
Yeah.
No, plank.
No.
No, we stopped going clink a long time ago. Okay, what do you mean?
They say there's a cutoff penalty, right, for a certain thing.
Cutoff.
That means your soul is cut off? Or does that mean...
Yeah, you are cut off. You experience
eternally.
Yourself cut off from the source.
That's eternally?
Well, eternally is a tough one. Not too many people make it to eternal cutoff. You know, there are ways of working you out, which we will talk about in the upcoming classes. But, I mean, you know, eternal cutoff.
So you differentiate the source and the soul. In other words, could each individual have a source within them?
The source within them?
Oh, tell them Elohim.
Well, again, being that we're all an expression of God, which is we're all creating the image of God, we are all in a reflection and expression of this original source. So we couldn't say the source is in us. But again, remember, words like in and out are words that belong to the spatial, temporal reality, which the divine is beyond. And therefore, when you're beyond the temporal, spatial reality, you're simultaneously in and out at the same time, right? I mean, you know, that's the problem. In time, I can only be here now, right, and there later when I'm in time. Right? In space, I'm either here or I'm over there. But if I transcend space, I can be both here and there, right, at the same time, right? And therefore, it's kind of hard for us to appreciate that. So, you know, is the divine within or is the divine without? We'll be talking about that at great length because this is a crucial, crucial struggle of the entire process of Judaism, which is the manifestation of divine truth, which is complete transcendence of time and space and therefore both in time and space and outside at the same time. And so we will be developing that, but of course, not for the sake of just philosophical games, but experiential inspiration and guidance in our life behavior. Right, that's what's crucial to this, but we still have to set down the philosophical ground rules. So, I mean, it's going to take time to develop this and to appreciate and reflect upon it.
Right, so you're saying this original reality is this timeless, spaceless?
No, we're saying that what we call God is whatever is the original reality is what we call God. All right, that's all. Whatever is the reality prior to time and space, right, we call God. Whatever is the reality which is the source of the rest of existence as we so see it, we call God. Right? And that original reality is completely free without limits, because there's nothing prior to that original reality that it has to answer to and is limited by. And therefore, the original reality is perfectly free. Right? And the original reality couldn't have anything less than what we know in existence, and therefore, the original reality is at least of life and consciousness. Right? And that's what we call Hashem.
Do you believe all this can be explained mathematically?
Mathematically? No. I don't think that would be important. I think this can all be understood intuitively, directly, and I think people know this, and the process of life is learning how to articulate it. Right? But people already know this. That's why the Bible never tried to prove God. It's a funny thing. Why doesn't the Bible spend some time proving God? Because it's self-evident, right? All you have to do is try and help people understand that your articulation makes much more sense, right, in terms of authentic encounter than the one they're using. Right? But whatever is, and we've all encountered what is, and you know, now we're just trying to see the implications of that encounter, and whether we have had an honest, we've honestly accepted the significance of that encounter. But when I'm in the forest, or I'm holding my children, or just sitting here right now, the very fact that I feel there's any meaning to discuss this itself demonstrates that I've encountered what is, right, or who is. Because I didn't encounter Big Bang. Big Bang wouldn't in any way motivate me to spend my life trying to bring meaning and teachings of love to people. Right? Big Bang would encourage me to make a lot of money and rip off people and do my own thing and eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow I shall die. I came from nothingness and I return to it, and while I'm around, let me enjoy it. Right? I wouldn't waste my time in any way struggling for meaningful living and righteous living, unless the encounter with what is that is that I've encountered is alive and caring and creative and directing and has some kind of sense of will. Right? That's why we first start with what is, but when we're honest, sometimes what is just not a correct word. It's more like who is at that point. Right? At that point, when you will hold your child or when you will, God willing, see the birth of your child, at that point, you won't say, thanks, Mother Nature. Right? You'll say, my God! Right? And there's nothing to talk about. And of course, there could be this very cold, stiff surgeon who says, oh, yes, isn't this very interesting? The process is very, very fascinating. You know? But you say, hey, buddy, I mean, you know, with all your scientific rhetoric, let's face it, my God! Right? Come on, say it, my God! What else could I say at that point, to be honest with what I just encountered?
Yeah, but we also say, my God, when we look at pictures of the Holocaust in Yad Vashem.
That's right. That's exactly it. I say, my God, what judgment. Like, my God, where did we go wrong? Right? Or, my God, what's going on here? I'm so confused. I don't understand your infinite ways. Right? Or, my God, I'm angry. But to be angry at God is believing in God also. You see, if you didn't believe in God, you wouldn't be angry either. That's the funny thing. People go, well, I don't believe in God because there's a Holocaust. Right? But they're angry. Right? Your anger itself proves that you've encountered what I call God. Because if there is no God, then what are you angry about? Why would you expect anything else? Right? I mean, this actually makes more sense that there should be Holocaust. Right? The principle of entropy that existence is moving towards greater and greater states of chaos. So then the Holocaust just makes sense and I would just say, oh yeah, wow, look, interesting. I wouldn't say, right? But I've been slapped in the face by the original one, the ultimate one. And there is significance that I must be honest in terms of my response to what I just encountered, right? So, it's in a forest, right? It's watching the sunset, watching the children play, and when you are open to it, it's this very moment. Right? And that's the difference. Right? That's the difference of just talking about this and living with it. Now, I realize this is very intense. So you can go out and have beer. Beer. Okay? And that's the antidote, right? For this not driving you nuts. But, of course, at this point, we go into, just in terms of human behavior, right? Human behavior. Of course, everyone wants to be real, so to speak, and everybody knows that until we're real, we won't be absolutely happy, right? So to the extent that the clarity of God is clear, then it will only enhance human happiness, right? It will only enhance human happiness. You know, I personally would never go around teaching people Judaism or God unless I thought it enhanced human happiness, right? So
we still have to develop the idea of... If a song is to a singer the way humans are to God, like a singer producing a song that makes him happy to make a song, so why does God need to be made happy?
Well, first of all, by definition, the word need to wouldn't make sense. Because need to would imply there's some kind of prior reality that exists that you need.
Why
does God choose to? If you ask the question, why does God choose to, then a God who has a why is no longer the original reality, because that God is motivated by some other primary cause. Right? Therefore, by definition, you could not say that God has a motive, because motive is not free. Something's pushing me. The only thing, nothing's pushing God. If something's pushing God, then that's not God. It's the original pushing, which is what we call God. Right? So therefore, why did God do this? Is a meaningless question, right? That God is doing this, right? That's just the facts, right? For what purpose is God doing it? That we can talk about. But what motivated God, by definition, is meaningless if you believe in original reality. Okay. So therefore, we will never talk about what motivated the divine, because that then the divine is a function of a motivation, which by definition is not the original reality. The is, was, will be, which everything is an expression of, and it is not an expression of anything. Okay? Everything is a function of, and Hashem is not a function of anything. So, motivation is meaningless, right? And to say that, well, maybe God would cease to exist. Well, that would mean something happened to God. And nothing happens to God, because God is what is the source of all happening. Right? So by definition, that too would be a silly statement to say that when you understand what we refer to when we say Hashem, right? You say, well, maybe Hashem just self-destructed, but that would mean something happened to God. Right? God is. Right? God might cease to be, but that doesn't mean that God doesn't continue and is. Right? There's a difference between is and being. Right? Is and being. What we will do tomorrow is we will take a poem of Rav Kook, or prose of Rav Kook, which will help you understand this experientially. Because what he's simply doing is just kind of in almost, creative flow, writes the implications of the encounter with the was, is, will be Hashem and the manifestation of Hashem in all of reality.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.